my Wrangler jeans from Walmart are legit my favorite go-to pants. They got that slim cut that's always fresh for going out.
Hey, what's up?
They're durable enough, even for my shift.
Water wrap.
And stretchy enough for when I want to kick back and chill with a movie. So basically, they can do it all, and on my budget. I mean, come on. You really can't beat all that. Shop your Wrangler pants at Walmart.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode contains a brief mention of suicide, so if you are sensitive to this content, please listen at your own discretion. What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hello, and welcome to Art Muse, a podcast that aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret well-known works of art by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. While these women's faces are familiar to viewers around the world, their identities have been largely forgotten. Together, we will appreciate these works of art from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Is the muse in actuality just as, if not more, important than the artists themselves? And I'm your host, Grace Anna. She stands with her wings spread high above New York City's Municipal Building, greets readers at the entrance to the New York Public Library, welcomes visitors to the Brooklyn Museum, and salutes guests of the Plaza Hotel. New Yorkers pass her sculpted image every day, but few know her name, or that her life story is one of the most riveting and tragic stories to come out of the 20th century. Listeners, today I share with you the story of Audrey Munson, America's first supermodel, who not only modeled for countless important sculptures in New York City, but all across the United States. Known as the woman with perfect form, Audrey's Grecian looks made her the ideal model for America's Gilded Age, which sought to recreate the monuments of antiquity for a new age in America. Dubbed the American Venus, Audrey's classical features became the face of America's neoclassical movement. In New York alone, Audrey modeled as the figure of civic fame atop Manhattan's Municipal Building, for the USS Main Monument in Columbus Circle, as Miss Manhattan and Miss Brooklyn flanking the entrance to the Brooklyn Museum, as the spirit of commerce at the Manhattan Bridge's archway, as the figure of virtue at the entrance of the New York Public Library, and as the Roman goddess of abundance splashing in the fountain outside of the Plaza Hotel, just to name a few. And she doesn't just grace New York City. Audrey Munson modeled as the figure of liberty on the Wisconsin State Capitol, as the nymphs on the James McMillan Memorial in Washington, D.C., and can additionally be found in the Peace Monument in Atlanta, the Longfellow Memorial in Cambridge, and the Monument to Women of the Confederacy in Jacksonville, Florida. In 1915, when San Francisco hosted its World Fair, featuring work by the country's top artists, Audrey Munson's image could be found in three quarters of the entire statues in the fair. To put it simply, Audrey Munson was a sensation, and she had the most famous face and figure of her time. She mingled and mixed with not only the day's famed artists, but also the most prestigious families of the Gilded Age. And as her celebrity status grew, it only made sense for Audrey to transition from artist model to a star of the silver screen. In her career, Audrey would feature in 4 films. And in her first film, titled Inspiration, Audrey became the first woman playing a leading character in American film history to be shown fully in the nude. Audrey's bold stance on female nudity echoed her overall feminist ideology. She joined the women's suffrage movement, advocating for women's right to vote, and believed in equal pay for women. She continuously pushed against society's beauty standards, firmly believing that women were most beautiful in their natural form and didn't need corsets and high heels to be deemed attractive. But the world Audrey existed in was decades behind her forward-thinking ideals. Though Audrey took full ownership of her body, proudly exhibiting her nude form in a time when that was almost unheard of, she could never fully escape male exploitation, and she was taken advantage of at every turn. Paid a measly 50 cents an hour to pose, equivalent to about $15 today, Audrey was severely underpaid. Her films were banned in many cities and promoted fierce criticism. Her life, which had once been so glorious, was soon turning tragic. Audrey Munson is perhaps America's first example of the cruel rise and fall of celebrity status. By the early 1920s, Audrey's life was filled with continuous challenges and tragedies. She endured sexual harassment and an attempted assault by a Broadway executive. She found herself in the heart of New York's biggest murder trial, in which Audrey's landlord murdered his wife so that he could be with her. She attempted suicide, suffered a sharp decline in her mental health, and finally, on her 40th birthday, was committed to a state hospital, where she lived out the next 60-plus years of her life, dying at the ancient age of 104, alone and completely erased from history. Today, her face, forever immortalized in bronze, stone, and copper throughout New York City, stares back at us, like a ghost from a haunted past. In this episode, we hope to bring her life and legacy the justice she deserves, so that the next time you walk by Audrey's sculpted form, you know that you are looking into the eyes of America's first superstar, the fearless Audrey Munson. So without further ado, let's dive in. Audrey Marie Munson was born on June 8, 1891, in Rochester, New York. She was baptized shortly after at St. Patrick's Roman Catholic Cathedral, a record that remains today. Audrey was the child of parents from very different economic and religious backgrounds. Her father, Edgar Munson, had Puritan roots. His ancestors were some of the earliest settlers in America. One in particular, Captain Thomas Munson, was one of the founders of New Haven, Connecticut. Edgar began his career as a streetcar conductor, but soon transitioned to real estate, becoming a prominent real estate agent of his day. Known for his wheeler-dealer attitude, he was notorious for being a bit of a shyster. Audrey's mother, Catherine Mahoney, who preferred to go by her nickname Kitty, was the daughter of recent Irish Catholic immigrants. Kitty's family faced a lot of religious prejudice, immigrating to America at an all-time high of anti-Catholic sentiment. Kitty grew up in a working-class community in Belleville, New York, and learned the tricks of survival early on. Kitty would wear many hats in her life, working in corset shops, selling cutlery, and being a maid, to name a few. Though we do not know how this unlikely pair met, we do know that Edgar Munson and Kitty Mahoney married on July 7, 1885, and shortly after moved to Rochester, where Audrey was born 6 years later. Audrey was born during an exciting and expansive time in U.S. history. Known as America's Gilded Age, the period saw some of the most important and life-changing inventions of all of humankind, like the telegraph, telephone, automobile, and the motion picture. It was also a time of great wealth, and many new families joined the ranks of America's elite. This came with substantial wealth inequality, and as the rich got richer, the divide between the upper and lower classes grew. Audrey was born into the latter of these categories. Though Audrey's father would one day become a wealthy real estate agent, at the time of her birth, he was working as a coachman for a tobacco manufacturer, and Audrey would have grown up in a modest household. Audrey was the first and only child that Edgar and Kitty bore, and we can imagine that she had a somewhat lonely childhood. In her isolation, Audrey's mother, Kitty, became her closest companion, a companionship that remained strong through Audrey's adult life. Equally isolated from her husband, Kitty depended just as much on the young Audrey for company. Their codependence developed at an early age largely contributed to Audrey's lifelong struggle to make friends of her own. On one of their adventures together, Kitty took the then 5-year-old Audrey to see a caravan of Romani travelers who were passing through upstate New York at the time. Amongst their group was the Romani queen Eliza Cooper, who attracted thousands of locals curious to see Romani royalty up close. Though Audrey and Kitty did not have the chance to meet Eliza Cooper herself, they did manage to have Audrey's fortune told by one of her fellow travelers. As Kitty ushered Audrey into the caravan, she asked the Romani woman what little Audrey's future held. The woman took Audrey's hand and began closely examining her palm, the weight of the silence leaving Audrey and Kitty with bated breath. After a moment, the Romani woman met Audrey's eye and in a hushed but confident voice declared, "You shall be beloved and famous. But when you think that happiness is yours, its Dead Sea fruit shall turn to ashes in your mouth. You, who shall throw away thousands of dollars as a caprice, shall want for a penny. You, who shall mock at love, shall seek love without finding. 7 men shall love you. 7 times shall you be led by the man who loves you to the steps of the altar. But never shall you wed." How did little Audrey feel as she listened to her prophecy? Was she filled with fear that her life could contain such tragedy? Did she tremble as she heard the Romani woman's words? Or did the possibility of being famous one day fill her with excitement? As she walked out of the caravan that day, Audrey's life would never be the same. Her prophecy would eerily mirror the course of her own life and hang over her head for decades to come. And if the prophecy wasn't enough to cast a dark shadow over Audrey's early years, her parents' strained relationship certainly would. As Audrey's father more seriously pursued his career as a real estate agent, he began traveling out west, buying land for cheap and flipping it for significantly more money. His increasing time spent out west meant that Audrey had limited time to spend with her father, and for much of these early years, Audrey and Kitty were left alone on a regular basis. Kitty became progressively more and more frustrated with Edgar, and felt that he was choosing his antics out west over his family. When Audrey was 6 years old, Kitty and Edgar separated, and Audrey was sent to live with her paternal grandparents on their farm. We can only imagine that this accentuated Audrey's feelings of abandonment. And to make matters worse, one day when Audrey was playing behind her grandparents' house, she fell into a stream and contracted typhoid from the filthy water. Though she did recover, the ordeal was enough for Kitty to deem Audrey's grandparents irresponsible and rushed to retrieve Audrey herself. Kitty would not leave Audrey's side again for the next 30-plus years. Kitty and Edgar officially divorced in 1899, when Audrey was just 8 years old. Divorce was relatively rare at the time, many deeming divorce unacceptable. And it was especially brave of Kitty to put herself in the position of being a single mother. Kitty's decision to legally leave Edgar was largely fueled by the discovery that Edgar was having an affair with another woman named Cora Cook, whom Edgar would eventually marry and have 8 children with. Kitty was granted sole custody of Audrey, and they moved together to Providence, Rhode Island. To make ends meet, Kitty ran a boarding house. It was in this house that Audrey spent her early adolescent years, amongst a motley crew of boarders. In Providence, Audrey attended a Catholic school run by the Sisters of Mercy. This school left an indelible impact on Audrey and provided her with a broad and substantial grounding in the arts. The nuns placed extra emphasis on art and culture in their education, and Audrey received lessons in oil painting, watercolor, pastels, and even decorating fine china. They placed equal importance on music, and Audrey was taught not only how to sing, but also how to play a number of different instruments, including the piano, violin, harp, and guitar. It was these nuns that provided Audrey with the artistic and musical background that she needed to become a star of the stage. And it was the stage that Audrey was soon coming for. Audrey had her heart set on becoming a stage actress from an early age. It was Kitty who encouraged the young Audrey to pursue a career as a performer. As Audrey's father later recalled, "It was her mother who talked the stage into her head from the time she was a baby. I can remember taking her to the theater and she'd get so excited that she'd stand through the whole thing." Audrey made her debut as a performer when she was just 17 years old, as a dancer in a nearby amusement park. The dance group, appropriately named the Dancin' Dolls, went on tour and even performed in New York City. We can only imagine Audrey's excitement as she danced alongside the chorus, clad in a long skirt with an infectious smile on her face. The following year, Audrey and Kitty decided to move to New York City full-time to pursue Audrey's career as a woman of the stage. The year was 1909, and New York was considered by most the capital of the world. New York's impressive Grand Central Station and Penn Station were under construction. J.P. Morgan, financial tycoon, had just built his personal library. The New York Public Library had just opened its doors on 42nd Street. Brooklyn's Academy of Music had just launched, and the Woolworth Building had recently gone up as the tallest building on the globe. It was a time of not only architectural expansion, but also of cultural evolution. And the city was filled with jazz clubs and musical theaters. How did the 18-year-old Audrey feel as she stepped off the train in New York City? Was she filled with a buzz of excitement that she would be calling this bustling city her home? Was she ready to take on New York's famous Broadway theaters? Did she know that soon she would be the biggest sensation the city had ever seen? We'll continue our story after a brief word from our advertisers.
My Keurig brewer from Walmart always comes in super clutch. I got it so I can keep grinding on my paper. You know I'm hitting that deadline. I also got it so I can stay up late to do some exam cramming. And of course, you know I'll be ready to stroll into my morning class, sipping in style. I guess you could say it's a literal lifesaver. Cheers to that. Shop your coffee fuel needs at Walmart.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun, trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store or online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back, listeners. Now let's dive back in. Upon their arrival, Audrey and Kitty found an apartment in the rural area of Upper Manhattan called Washington Heights, which had a large Irish population. This must have been of comfort to Kitty, to be amongst her people in as large of an island as Manhattan. After years of living at a boarding house in Providence, Audrey and Kitty must have been delighted to have an apartment of their own. Their first apartment was located on 190th Street, and the rent was $25 a month, equivalent to about $900 today. To pay the rent and support Audrey as she began her career, Kitty took up a job as a nurse. Though Audrey struggled to make new friends in the Big Apple, she did connect with her cousin, Harriet Lyman Munson, who was married to a man well-connected to the elite of New York. She and her husband took Audrey out to the finest restaurants in the city and gave Audrey firsthand access to New York's high culture circles. Sitting at these dinners, Audrey must have felt the potential of all that New York had to offer. And soon, she would infiltrate these circles with her good looks, talent, and a little bit of good luck. Determined to launch her career, Audrey worked her way up in the theater world. She made her debut on Broadway in a walk-in part as a male footman in the musical called The Boy and the Girl. She shortly after became a chorus girl at the Casino Theater on Broadway. Though chorus girls did have a reputation for promiscuity, for Audrey, it was a dream come true to be a part of a Broadway ensemble. Audrey took her role as chorus girl very seriously and appreciated the opportunity to prove her talent as a singer, dancer, and actress. Being a chorus girl was hard work, and shows often ran into the wee hours of the night. Audrey danced as a chorus girl in at least three different Broadway productions over the course of her first year in New York City. And though it wouldn't come from Broadway, Audrey's big break was just around the corner. On one fateful autumn afternoon in 1909, Audrey and Kitty decided to window shop on New York's up-and-coming Fifth Avenue. Though they couldn't afford the elegant outfits, they liked to imagine themselves in the beautiful gowns that graced the shop windows. As mother and daughter daydreamed their way down the avenue, Audrey noticed that a man had begun to follow them, staring at her with curious eyes. Being the protective mother she was, Kitty confronted him and asked why he was seemingly stalking them. After apologizing for the scare, the man explained that he was a photographer and hoped that Audrey would come to his studio to model for him. Though Kitty was hesitant at first, he invited Kitty to join as chaperone, and they agreed to meet at his studio later that week. This chance encounter would forever change the course of Audrey Munson's life. And thus was Audrey's beginnings as an art model. As luck would have it, the man who approached Audrey to model for him was Felix Benedict Herzog, a well-established photographer who worked closely with the renowned Alfred Stieglitz. How did Audrey feel as she walked into Herzog's studio for the first time? Was she excited to model for an artist, or was she nervous and apprehensive? As Audrey prepared herself for the camera, would she have known that she would soon be modeling for some of the biggest artists of her day?
Audrey later recalled this first experience in Herzog's studio to a reporter of the New York Sun. In Audrey's words, "It was all an accident, and until an hour or so before I did pose, such a thing never entered my mind. We did not like the idea at all, but finding out that he was one of the best photographers in town, Mother and I went. He took some photographs, said I have the head of almost antique line, and began to tell his artist friends about me. From that time on, I have posed." Audrey soon began modeling for Herzog several times a week. She posed as a series of Greek goddesses, draped in Greco-Roman style cloth. She not only became his favorite model, but Herzog fell head over heels for Audrey. Though already in his 50s, and Audrey only 18, Herzog eventually proposed to Audrey. Perhaps out of appreciation for Herzog, Audrey accepted the proposal, despite their significant age difference. But as Audrey's prophecy predicted, Audrey would never wed Herzog. Before they could tie the knot, Herzog died of a surgical complication at the age of 52. As Audrey later recalled, "The first declaration of affection I heard came from a man old enough to be my father. He asked me to wed him so that he might protect and safeguard my beauty. I was a slip of a girl, wide-eyed, impulsive, and trusting. This man had guided my feet along the pathway of art. I told him I would wed him if he wished, but before the arrangements were made, he died." Though Herzog would not survive long enough to see it himself, he set Audrey up to be one of the most successful models of the 20th century. As a member of the National Arts Club, Herzog had connections with some of the country's greatest creatives and began introducing Audrey to other prominent artists so that she could also model for them. Audrey not only had a natural talent for holding poses, but had the perfect look for the burgeoning neoclassical style that was making a splash through New York's art world. At 5'8", Audrey was tall and lean, with a body of ideal Grecian proportions. She had attractive feminine curves and two perfectly formed dimples on the small of her back, which Audrey later joked were as valuable to her as government bonds. She had flawlessly chiseled cheekbones, skin smooth as milk, blue eyes, and a classically shaped nose. Although it was Herzog's connections, it didn't take much for these artists to be swept off their feet by Audrey's natural beauty and grace, and artists began clamoring to have her model for them. One of the most pivotal of Audrey's early modeling experiences was with the Austrian sculptor Isidore Conti. When Audrey arrived at Conti's studio, with Kitty as her chaperone, she was immediately impressed by Conti's forward-thinking environment. He had a female studio assistant, who would later become a sculptor in her own right, and whom Audrey would one day sit for. There was a palpable excitement in the air, and Audrey wanted to be a part of the buzz. Though Conti wasn't sure at first if he needed a model, he was struck by sudden inspiration upon seeing Audrey. Conti had an unfinished sculpture of the Three Graces in his studio that he had given up on because he couldn't find the right model. As Audrey sat before him, he knew his prayers had finally been answered. Audrey must have been delighted to model for such a prestigious sculptor. But there was one glaring hurdle. Audrey would have to pose in the nude. When Kitty realized that Audrey would have to take her clothes off, her eyes nearly bulged out of her head. But Conti kept his calm, telling Kitty, "To us, it makes no difference if our model is draped in furs. We only see the work we are doing." With this reassurance, Kitty gave her nod of approval, and thus was the start of Audrey's long career of posing in the nude. How did it feel as Audrey took her clothes off to pose in the flesh for the very first time? Was she timid, anxious, apprehensive, or was the experience exhilarating? did she feel like for the first time in her life, she was fully free. Audrey's bravery would pay off. Modeling for Conti was not only a career-changing opportunity, but a new adventure that the young and bold Audrey could embark upon. She posed for not just one, but all three of the Graces. In the sculpture, we see three female figures embracing each other as their draperies are swept by an upward wind. Two of the three figures are bare-breasted, with muscular arms and chiseled abs. Because Audrey modeled for all three figures, each of the three Graces share facial features, a straight nose, soft lips, and high cheekbones. The sculpture was installed in the ballroom of the then-new Hotel Astor on 42nd Street. Modeling for Conti was a massive triumph and prompted Audrey to become New York's next sensation. Looking at the sculpture, it's not hard to imagine why Audrey was such an appealing model for artists of her day. Her willingness to pose in the nude propelled her career to new heights, and she began to build a reputation as not only the most beautiful model in New York, but also as a woman willing to pose in the nude at a reasonable rate. In Audrey's own words, "That which is the immodesty of other women has been my virtue, my willingness that the world shall gaze upon my figure unadorned." But posing in the nude did not necessarily come naturally to Audrey, and she often said that in these early years, she had to brazen it out. She developed coping mechanisms to combat any feelings of self-consciousness and shame. As Audrey remembered, "In position, holding a pose while a sculptor or painter worked, I thought of myself only as a model, a mere piece of human flesh. The moment the artist dropped his brush or mallet or modeling tool, I became the human young woman again, shamed to have my body seen." By focusing on the artwork at hand, Audrey became more and more comfortable with posing in the nude. She was also a uniquely hard worker. Audrey took her job as an artist model extremely seriously and turned away the invites to late-night parties and lavish gifts that other models jumped on. As Audrey explained, "There is no time for late suppers, and I shouldn't go to them if there was. A model who means business cannot go out and stay up all hours of the night. Another thing against late hours is your appearance. Models who take their work seriously know that they must look well. They take care of their complexions and their tempers, for it does not do to carry a nervous grouch to a studio with you." By 1911, Audrey was dubbed the Queen of the Artist Studios. Artists in New York City began calling Audrey the most perfectly formed woman in the world. They would recommend Audrey to their colleagues and write her glowing letters of recommendation. She posed for sculptors, photographers, illustrators, and painters, totaling hundreds of individual works. Audrey's image found its way onto public monuments and fountains, private mansions, and in one instance, even a steamship. In fact, Audrey posed for so many works during this fruitful period that it would be near impossible for us to examine each one within the parameters of this episode. Think of this as a highlight section, but I highly encourage you to take a look at Audrey's vast portfolio at large. The first prominent work that Audrey posed for during this time was for sculptor Frederick Mamonis. In 1911, Audrey modeled for his figure of beauty, which was commissioned to flank the southern entrance of the New York Public Library, where it remains today. Here Audrey stands atop a fountain, like a water nymph fresh from the sea. She is portrayed in the nude with a cloth resting on her right thigh. She relaxes against a majestic horse as she stares up at the sky with a peaceful countenance, as if the sun has just hit her face. Appropriately named Beauty, Audrey radiates beauty in every sense of the word, with a timeless grace and elegance. Audrey has since greeted readers at the New York Public Library for over 100 years, where she continues to usher people in with her effortless charm. The following year, Audrey modeled for another iconic New York City monument, the newly constructed Municipal Building. Designed by the infamous Stanford White, the 40-story Municipal Building was erected across from City Hall. At the time of its construction, it was the third tallest building in all of New York. When sculptor Adolph Weinmann was commissioned to create the golden figure of civic fame that would crown the building's top, he knew of no better model to use than Audrey Munson. Standing atop the Municipal Building's highest perch, we see a regal Audrey Munson. Gilded in copper, she rests her feet upon a golden globe and proudly holds a crown and five-leaf laurel, representing the five boroughs of New York. A gentle wind sweeps up her Grecian robe, and upon her head is a golden wreath. Mounted over 580 feet above the ground, Audrey looks out at Manhattan's skyline as a guardian of the city itself. She remains there, high in the sky today, like a golden angel protecting New Yorkers from above. To this day, civic fame is the second largest female statue in New York City after the Statue of Liberty. Equally as regal, in 1912, Audrey modeled for Attilio Picciarelli's monument to the USS Maine in Central Park. Here, Audrey stands gallantly above a giant pillar, gilded in bronze as the personification of triumph. Her arm is raised above like a female warrior bringing her army to victory. Just behind her, three giant seahorses draw a seashell carriage to her feet, as if they are just about to pick her up for her victory lap. The statue remains today at the entrance to Central Park by Columbus Circle. In 1914, sculptor Carl Augustus Herber sculpted Audrey as the Spirit of Commerce at the foot of the Manhattan Bridge. Here Audrey remains, winged with a fist in the air, greeting all that enter Manhattan. Herber was particularly fond of Audrey and found her to be the perfect model, not only for her looks, but also for her personality. As Herber once said, "Yes, she is the real Miss Manhattan now, and really, she ought to be too. She has grit, determination, and best of all, a sense of humor." Audrey modeled for Augustus Luckman's monument to Isidore and Ida Strauss, who once owned Macy's before sinking to the bottom of the ocean floor with the Titanic. When the elderly couple were offered a place in a lifeboat, Isidore Strauss refused, insisting that all women and children should be saved first. Ida, who could have remained on the lifeboat, threw herself off, declaring, "I will not be separated from my husband. As we have lived, so we will die together." Built 3 years after the Titanic sinking, a monument was erected to honor the Strauss' legacy in Upper Manhattan. And it is here that we see Audrey, posed as the figure of memory, reclining to her side atop a pillow. Her hand grazes her chin as if in deep contemplation, and her foot gently hovers over the fountain below her. The figure of memory is the only statue in the memorial, and Audrey, the sole representative of not only the Strausses, but of all the 1,500 lives lost at sea on that tragic night. The same year, Audrey modeled for the sculptor Carl Bitter for what would tragically be his last work ever made. Here, Bitter sculpted Audrey into the fountain outside of New York's famous Plaza Hotel. Posed as Pomona, the Roman goddess of abundance, Audrey stands naked, twisted, as if caught in mid-action. In her hand, she carries a basket of ripe fruit as she balances above the flowing fountain. Cast in bronze, Audrey measures an impressive 7 feet 9 inches, giving her a larger-than-life appearance. Though Bitter designed Audrey as Pomona, he was fatally struck by a car outside the Metropolitan Opera and died before it was completed. The sculpture was finished by Isidore Conti and remains outside the Plaza Hotel today. And lastly, in 1916, Audrey modeled for the renowned sculptor Daniel Chester French, most famous for his sculpture of Abraham Lincoln at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. For French, Audrey modeled as Miss Manhattan and Miss Brooklyn, originally flanking Brooklyn's entrance to the Manhattan Bridge. In both, we find Audrey seated as if on a royal throne. She is crowned and garbed in a flowing robe. In one, she holds a globe. In the other, a tablet, both symbols of prominence and power. Each sculpture, measuring a colossal 13 feet, are massive granite structures, and we can only imagine how impressive they would have seemed to drivers crossing the Manhattan Bridge. The sculptures were relocated in 1983 to the outside of the Brooklyn Museum, where they remain today. French had a particular fondness for Audrey, once stating, "I know of no other model with the peculiar style that Miss Munson possesses. There is a certain ethereal atmosphere around her that is rare. She has a decidedly expressive face, always changing. There is no monotony in her expression. And still, the dominant feeling is that she is just such a type as many of the early painters would have selected for a Madonna. It is a great satisfaction to find so much grace and fineness of line combined. Those who are not artists hardly realize what a really serious question the model is. And perhaps, too, they cannot quite grasp the feeling of enthusiasm that comes to a man or woman in this work when such a model comes to their knowledge." French was so grateful that Audrey modeled for his works that he gifted her a marble bust of her own head. And Audrey didn't just model for sculptors. In 1913, she posed for the avant-garde painter Francis Picabia. Modeling for the experimental painter was vastly different from her experiences with the neoclassical sculptors of New York. When Audrey walked into Picabia's studio, she was met by a chain-smoking, erratic man whose studio floors were covered in a mess of cigarette ash and paint. Though it wasn't her usual gig, Audrey was curious to model for an artist so unlike anyone she had ever met. Known for her ability to hold poses for remarkable lengths of time, Audrey was well-versed in the art of standing still. But to her surprise, Picabia asked her to pose in constant motion. As Audrey recalled, "I posed for him for several days, but never in still position. He had me walk around the studio in different light and taking different postures. He wanted to paint me in action, not in repose. The result was another collection of color areas, cubes, angles, and blank spaces on the canvas, vivid colors and mysterious lines and circles. When he finished, he professed great satisfaction. It was a true portrait of a woman walking," he declared. Though open to the new experience, Audrey found working with Picabia to be overall unsettling, and it would be the first and last time Audrey modeled for a modernist painter. Audrey once wrote of modernism, "To be told that such a canvas, which seems to represent nothing at all, but meaningless mass of colors, is a portrait of a lady or a man with a mustard pot, only adds to the mystery." This work, titled Eudine, Young American Girl Dance, can be viewed today at the Centre Pompidou. Her distaste for modern art did not stop Audrey from becoming the most popular art model in America. By 1913, every prominent sculptor in New York not only knew her name, but every curve of her body by heart. Audrey was making her way to the heart of New York's Beaux-Arts architectural boom. It was a time of great civic pride, and artists sought to celebrate this new age in America with buildings and statues emulating the classical monuments of antiquity. And Audrey became the face of this artistic renaissance. At the height of her career, Audrey claimed that she modeled for a staggering 200 different artists. Her image could be found all over the entire city. Newspapers began calling her the most copied girl in America. With her growing success, Audrey was able to afford a bigger apartment for her and Kitty, and they moved to the prestigious Upper West Side. Audrey now made enough money to support them both, so Kitty quit her job as a nurse and focused on assisting Audrey with her career. When Audrey returned home from long modeling sessions, Kitty would welcome her at the door and give her a much-needed massage. For modeling, even with Audrey's fame, came with its tribulations and was far from glamorous. As Audrey once described modeling as, "very nerve-trying to stand in one position for half an hour, no matter how easy the position may be, is really a strain. To sit still in the same position when one is not thinking is not simple. But when you come to concentrate your mind on the work and endeavor to hold expression of face as well as figure for 30 minutes without resting, it is pretty tiring. If a girl's nerves are not in excellent condition and her muscles strong and ready for such a test, she makes a wobbly sort of model and the artist cannot work." And despite her success, it was still hard for models to make a living wage. Paid only 50 cents an hour, Audrey was never able to make more than $30 a week, just enough to cover her basic bills and expenses. As Audrey herself once said, "it was just enough to pay our rent, grocery bills, and buy a few clothes once in a while. Almost nothing for amusements." But her hard work would pay off, and her fame would soon reach newfound heights. In February of 1915, San Francisco hosted a World Fair. Dubbed the Panama Pacific International Exposition, the fair was a way to celebrate the recent completion of the Panama Canal. Though the fair exhibited work by America's greatest artists of the time, there was only one name on everyone's lips: Audrey Munson. Audrey had modeled for 3/4 of the statues and murals at the fair. As visitors walked the halls, they would have seen Audrey's image reproduced countless times. Audrey was so prevalent in the fair that she was rightfully nicknamed the Exhibition Girl. Audrey was featured in work by over a dozen different prominent artists, including Adolph Weinmann, Robert Aitken, and Alexander Sterling Calder, amongst others. Weinmann transformed Audrey's image into a nude and winged goddess for his descending night. Aitken turned Audrey into the allegories of the four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. Calder created 90 star maiden figures, all of which were modeled off of Audrey. Audrey was so popular at the fair that her image was even on the expo's official commemorative medal. And her prevalence did not go unnoticed. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote in the review of the fair, "America's greatest sculptors are ready to admit that Audrey Munson is the most perfectly formed woman who has ever posed in an American studio." And the New York American Magazine wrote, "These painters and sculptors will tell you that Audrey amply deserves some public notice in connection with the plaudits which their works receive. Sitting to artists is tiresome work, meaning a strain upon every muscle, an ache upon every nerve. Besides having an almost perfect face and figure, Audrey revealed a remarkable talent for enduring these strains and aches. At different hours of the day and night, she could and did pose for a dozen artists. For 2 years, she posed until 1 or 2 in the morning. Some of these poses are very difficult. For example, standing on the tips of her toes like a ballet dancer. Few models can hold a pose like this for more than a minute at a time." But no one was as happy walking down those halls than Audrey herself. How did Audrey feel as she saw her own image recreated by the best artists of her day at every turn she took? Was she filled with joy, pride, and excitement? Was she reminiscing about the different experiences of modeling for the exhibited works? Was she basking in her newfound success? Or was she already conjuring up plans for her future? As she admired her repeated image, Audrey exclaimed, "Can this be? Did I help to make this thing of beauty?" Audrey later remembered of the fair. "You will agree in this case that I am certainly the most versatile creature, able to be, like the elements, at war with myself. Here I am, larger than the largest elephant, naked, calm, indifferent to the crowds that surge around me, seem to grovel at my feet. It is almost a shock to realize that I am myself merely a girl in that crowd. But for a moment, I have felt the intoxication of brute power." The fair remained open until early December of that year. A total of 19 million people were able to visit the expo, giving Audrey unprecedented exposure. The fair's success elevated Audrey to celebrity status and opened exciting new doors of opportunity. The world was Audrey Munson's oyster, and she was ready to embark on her next life chapter. With a future so bright, Audrey could have never imagined the dark ways in which her life would soon unravel. For this rising star would never shine as brightly again. I hope you have enjoyed part one of our two-part episode on Audrey Munson. We will finish Audrey's story and honor her immense legacy in part two of this episode. I have included images, resources, and suggestions for further reading on the Art Muse website and Instagram. Art Muse is produced by Kula Production Company. Today's episode was written by me, your host, Grace Anna. Stay tuned as I continue to share the stories of the women behind some of the world's most important works of art. Until next time, bye for now. We are so excited to announce that Art Muse will be returning for a second season. Season 2 continues to share the life stories of the women pictured in famous works of art, this time with the theme of society women and social sensations. Season 2 honors the legacies of 10 different women, plus a secret bonus episode. Season 2 will begin its release this July. We cannot wait to share these amazing women's stories with you.
My Keurig brewer from Walmart always comes in super clutch. I got it so I can keep grinding on my paper. You know I'm hitting that deadline. I also got it so I could stay up late to do some exam cramming. And of course, you know I'll be ready to stroll into my morning class, sipping in style. I guess you could say it's a literal lifesaver. Cheers to that. Shop your coffee fuel needs at Walmart.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches. Now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles. Just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.